Ever heard a story and just know that something extra is also part of that story? Not hidden bits and pieces, but a whole narrative. A top story is running along, but another story runs underneath the surface, occasionally poking up the periscope to take a look around before resubmerging, as it can run silent, run deep. That's an allusion to the famous submarine movie. That submerged story, it's an allegory. And allegory occurs more often than we would imagine. How do we craft our own allegories? This episode can help. Welcome to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers, newbies, and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Writers, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. An allegory is much like an analogy, a comparison with parallel elements. It functions like an extended metaphor with multiple equatable traits in common, the this equals that equation. But an allegory is not in the realm of figures of speech. Allegory belongs in the category of interpretive. We are reading into the text, bringing our interpretation to the flat words on the page. A writer will give us hints to access the underlying narrative, but it doesn't affect our enjoyment of the top story or the surface story. Here's the definition. Allegory is a narrative in verse or prose in which the characters and action represent abstract concepts apart from the literal meaning of the story. The underlying meaning may have a moral, social, religious, or political significance. Because it has different parts tied together by a common purpose, the allegory will seem like an extended metaphor. All the World's a Stage by William Shakespeare is not an allegory because it is not a narrative. It is an extended metaphor. The allegory is different from a symbol in that the allegory will function throughout the entire narrative, while a symbol represents an idea that may have different meanings during the course of the narrative. Think of the allegory as a story underneath another story, a dual story, one obvious, the other hidden. A parable is an allegory, the prodigal son, or the talents, or the sower. We have the surface story of the wastrel son going off, spending and spending until his money runs out, and his so-called friends all vanish. He wakes up one morning in the pigsty, realizing that his own father feeds his workers better than this farmer that he's working for, and he determines to go home. As he approaches home, his dad sees him, runs, and gives him a big hug, and demands that a feast be prepared. After you clean up, of course, but then mikasa sukasa. I've gone a little modern, but that's the parable of the prodigal son, reminding us that no matter our sorry condition, even when we've brought the pigsty upon ourselves, we can always return home to Papa. He will welcome us with open arms, no questions, and give us what we need. Here is another parable to represent allegory. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus is asked, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus replies with the parable, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers, who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, and passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, 'Take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay whatever more you spend.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? And the lawyer said, The one who showed him mercy. Jesus said to him, Go and do likewise. That story of the Good Samaritan comes from Luke 10. Now, Origen explained the underlying allegory to us. Origen lived about 185 to 254 A.D. He posited that just as humans are comprised of three senses, body, soul, and spirit, it followed that Scripture would be comprised of three meanings, literal, moral, and spiritual. No element in Origen's explanation of the parable of the Good Samaritan went without allegory. Jerusalem represents heaven, Jericho represents the world, the robbers are the devil and his minions, the priest represents the law, the Levite the prophets, the Good Samaritan represents Christ, the donkey is Christ's body carrying the fallen man to the inn, which becomes the church. Even the Samaritan's promise to return translates into Christ's triumphal and millennial return. We have Plato's allegory of the cave, reminding us that when we see the light, other people won't believe us. John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress has an obvious allegory. George Orwell's Animal Farm, with its allegory of the Soviet-Russian Revolution, follows each point by point, each person by an animal, each event by an event. Lenin, Stalin, and Trotsky are represented by the Boer's O major, Napoleon, and Snowball. The oppressing master, with his tools of oppression, is Farmer Jones, with his harness and whips. Workers, intellectuals, bureaucrats, soldiers, and the restoration of a hierarchy, all are Clover and Boxer, Benjamin, the pigs, and the dogs. Rebellion, rumors of rebellion, confessions and purges, propaganda and lies, are the slaughter of the chickens, and more sheep bleating, two legs good, four legs better. Futile projects that mean everything, and the futile ends for loyal workers are building and rebuilding that windmill. The not-so-obvious allegory in Call of the Wild by Jack London represents the steps that will drive a civilized man back to primitive savagery. One of the first steps to destroy civilized man is physical abuse. Buck, our protagonist, is beaten repeatedly, at odd times, in ways he doesn't understand. He is deprived of food and water. Once he is thrown into the frozen north, his focus becomes basic needs. His new owners provide food and shelter. He has the team for safety and security, but he soon learns that he cannot depend on his owners for these needs. Since he has lost his family and the position he had at his former home, he thinks to earn esteem through his role on the sled team. He plunges himself into his new job. His efforts are recognized, but he gains nothing, all work and no play. He's a slave to work without any benefit. During this time, he also discovers that honorable behavior will only cost him. One example is associated with food. Buck doesn't receive enough food to survive. He has to steal. He learns to be tricky and clever with stealing, so he won't be punished. One of society's major laws, no stealing, becomes as nothing to him. He also learns that overwork will destroy his health and will only get him a merciful death rather than a retirement for work done. This is also a lesson in Orwell's Animal Farm. So we have removal of any sense of esteem through honorable behavior. The next destroyed ladder rung for civilized behavior is removal of any sense of belonging to family or to friends or to a group. Buck feels disjointed from his owners and the sled team. He learns through his fights with Spitz that only the strongest survive. The defeated become food for the starving sled team. Finally, the rewards he receives are for violent, primitive behavior, especially dominance. Fighting off those who attack, killing those who would kill him. Only John Thornton's love holds him in society. When Thornton is killed, he has no reason to remain in a society that abused him and destroyed all ties to that society. He only has what he himself can get, any way he can get it. Thus, he has descended to primitive savagery. We have more on allegories, but if we continue it, we'll be at 45 minutes. Next week, we present two modern and greatly popular allegories, both which have captured the public's interest. One is filled with questions, the other with mistaken assumptions. It's Carole King's Tapestry and The Eagles, Hotel California, in our next episode of The Right Focus. Join us. Inspiration this week comes from Francois Mauriac, who said, "Each of us is like a desert, and a literary work is like a cry from the desert, or like a pigeon loose with a message in its claws, or like a bottle thrown into the sea. The point is to be heard, even if by one single person." Makes you wonder if Jack London was speaking to the society when he wrote Call of the Wild. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by Emma Lee from Writers Inc. Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Poliszczuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at linkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mind your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.